You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Listening to the cycling podcast Femina, brought to you by Skoda, dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.
Today we're in Stowmarket.
The peloton now reached 15 kilometres to go. Time gap increases further, 1 minute 40 seconds.
1:40 to the front, 1:40 to the front. Great job, Abby May. Do not switch off behind. Come on. 42 kilometers. Less than 10k now, Abby May. Come on, less than 10k. Come on, Abby May. Come on, you got this. All those years of training, all those years of preparation. Come on, this is it. Drive, drive, drive. Dig, dig, dig. Come on.
And 10 seconds advantage for rider number 85 with 4 kilometres to go.
Make them chase you all the way to the finish, Abby May. Really good job. You should be very, very proud of yourself today. Great job. Come on, girls, behind. This is just the start. We're here to race. Let's show everyone we're here to race. Come on!
Well, Rose Manley, what were we played in with there?
Oh, well, that was part of my day in the drops car where... I mean, there wasn't much to say for most of the stage, but then Abby May Parkinson made an amazing solo attack and Bob Varney was just going for it, giving her the extra watts, shouting lots of motivational things, some kind of sweary things, but actually she couldn't hear them. So
it was wasted. Did you find it inspiring?
I did. Yeah. And Graham Hurd, who was in the car, also, you know, said, "Give me a bike." He said, "Give me a bike right now. I will go and win this stage." You know, it was giving. You know, like, you know, it should have given her.
This is hard to imagine.
200 extra watts.
Maybe
you know?
We should play that clip to ourselves every morning in the women's chair and do like a Mr. Motivator type stretch.
I know Graham Hurd quite well. If it inspired him, then it must have been very rousing indeed. My name is Rich Moore and I'm with Rose Manley, who you just heard, and Orla Shinawee.
Hello.
And this is the first of our daily podcast from the women's tour, stage one today. Where are we, Orla?
We are in Stowmarket, which is in East Anglia, a lovely little market town. We started in a market town today, didn't we, in Beccles, which was beautiful. I fell in love with that place. It was like a living museum to English quaintness. And now we're in Stowmarket where the race finished.
And it was a bit wet here as well, but it dried up. And I think the weather played a part today in the racing. It was quite breezy and wet and quite a long stage, although it wasn't that far. They weren't that far apart. It was a long old stage today. So what happened, Orla? We're going to do your story of the stage.
We are.
A lot of expectation.
Well, yeah, I'm feeling the burden of that expectation. I need Bob in my ear giving me encouragement. Mm. Because, well, we decided we were going to do a few cultural or geographical themes, didn't we? And so I was trying to think of how to theme the story of the stage today. And John Milton used to make regular visits here. Did you both know in your Wikipedia research? No, Rich is pulling a face. Well,
I did. I did, because there was a picture of John Milton on the wall of the Wetherspoons that we were briefly in. And then up sticks and came here. And I had to down my half pint of
what likely bedfellows, John Milton and Wetherspoons. I'm sure they're all reading
We've
Paradise
gone from
Lost.
Too much noise, too little noise here, haven't we? There was a bit of laughter cutting through in the Wetherspoons.
And it wasn't ours. Yeah. And quite frankly, we only want our own fun. But anyway, so I was actually going to base it around John Milton and his famous poem Paradise Lost, which tells the story of Adam and Eve, essentially. So I was waiting for pandemonium or some sort of redemption in the race. I was going to mistakenly name Manon Lloyd Mammon, one of Satan's followers, but we didn't see her very much in the race, and I thought it was a bit unfair as well. It's not very nice, is it?
No serpents
as a comparison.
Here, it's a women's race.
And also, the poem follows the epic tradition of starting in medias res, or the midst of the race, with the background then coming later. But if I did that, There wasn't much of a background. There wasn't much at the start of the race. So I thought, sod that, sod Milton. Sorry, John Milton. And I went for John Peel instead because he lived near here. And there's a John Peel sort of arts and culture centre nearby. His kids went to school.
Are we not in the John Peel centre here?
I knew you thought that earlier and I didn't want to correct you.
Oh, right.
In front
sorry.
Of the lady from the Ronnie from John Peel Centre. No, we're in the Mix. This place is called the Mix. The John Peel Centre is nearby, I think. But we did have a guy from the John Peel Centre playing us amazing acoustic music earlier.
Do you like, I like the way Ronna says Peel, do you?
Yeah, I do. It's lovely.
Peel. Peel.
Peel. Peel. What? Why do you
Peel.
Say it?
John Peel.
Peel is how I would say P-A-L-E. Like if you hadn't had enough sun. You're a bit peel.
Pale?
Yeah. Oh that's my God. How I would say that.
Ah, okay.
Whereas if you peel an orange, you peel it. You don't peel it because that would be to like impale it. Oh, the vagaries of our accents.
So
anyway,
basically we don't know what any of each other are talking about most of the time. It's basically
but
what
we
we've worked out.
Talking about cycling. Before we yes. do, though.
But maybe John tell Peel, people who John Peel was, yeah.
Well, yeah, famous DJ, Radio 1 DJ, principally. Started off in Radio Caroline, isn't that what it was called? The
Only Richard is old enough
radio
to know.
Station. What was your favourite genre that John Peel championed, Richard?
What do you think? Indie.
Indie.
Wedding
Sad,
Present,
depressing.
The Smiths, all that kind of stuff. He loved all that.
Rose?
Got to be a connoisseur for dub reggae. What
yeah?
can I say?
Yeah.
You look at me, you think, dub fan.
There's a reggae girl. There's a dub gal. Anyway, we ain't talking about dub. We're talking about the women's tour, and that might give you a bit of a clue because I've thrown in some John Peel song references. See how many you can find. Right, well, as we've already said, it was fairly uneventful.
We haven't started yet.
What? I'm about
what
to give the...
Sorry, what? I thought we'd already started the story of the stage in a roundabout fashion.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay, go.
We've given a cultural background to where we are.
Okay.
But now for the stage itself, fairly uneventful for the first part of the race, so no anarchy in the UK. The heavens opened shortly after the race left Beccles this morning. Not the nicest of days in the road, as you said, Richard. Didn't stop the good vibrations along the roadside, though. We had the usual fantastic crowds, school children lining the roads with flags, teenage kicks and older fans alike. I just love that about modern racing in the UK. It's become quite common, people, hasn't it? To have just this atmosphere that's
wait a minute,
really
you're calling
synonymous.
The spectators common people?
No, I'm calling you two people. I say it's quite common.
I want to live like them.
Yeah, I do. You do. Done. Anyway, no matter what the weather, the fans turn out here, and I love that. It's great to see you again today. Not a happy a day of happy cycling, though, for Anna Trevisi of Ali Cipollini. She had a crash fairly early on, didn't finish the stage, so our first abandonee. The first intermediate sprint went to last year's winner, Corin Rivera of Sunweb, so quite a groovy feeling for her to know she's coming into form and it matters again. With Sheila Gutierrez-Ruiz of Movistar in second and Rivera's young teammate in third, Suzanne Anderson. The Sunweb riders, thick as thieves in the second sprint with Rivera, Anderson and Leah Kurtzman taking the points there. Then Christine Majerus, showed she had plenty of mountain energy, taking the first set of Queen of the Mountains maximum points. And we spent much of the first 135 kilometres, no less, with the bunch mostly together, battling through that rain. Then with 22 kilometres to go, out of this wild darkness emerged Abby Mae Parkinson with our first attack off the front. The first attack with 22 kilometres to go says a lot. And the drops rider built up a lead of 1:40 at one stage, and she took the second Queen of the Mountains points over Majerus again. Parkinson did get to cross the finish line first, but only on the race's first time over the finish in Stowmarket. Our lone wanderer with a still decent lead, taking the third intermediate sprint over Mariana Voss and Gutierrez-Ruiz again of Movistar. She was caught before the line, though, and awarded the combativity award for her brass neck move. Quite rightly so, I would say. Maybe a bit of whiskey in the jar for their Team DS, Bob Varney, tonight. I think you might be celebrating that one. We did have a bunch sprint for the finish in the end. They say love is a drug, but winning is a drug for Julian Dora. She got her second
opening. No drugs,
opening.
Please,
yeah, step away, all of them.
High on life, yeah. She's got a lust for life, that girl. Took her second opening win in a row at the Tour of Britain in East Anglia once again. Spooky. Amy Peters, her Bowles Dolmans teammate, finished in second, and Lisa Brenner of WNT in third. So this evening, the jerseys go to Corin Rivera of Sunweb, who takes this sprint's jersey, Queen of the Mountains to Christine Majerus of Bowles Dolmans, points jersey to Julian Dora, as well as the green jersey for the overall leader. Best British rider is Eleanor Dickinson tonight of Drops, and the best team is Bowles. So that is how we're looking at the end of stage one. But who will have what when Saturday comes? That's the question. And that is your stage story of the stage.
The fastest clothing in the world tour. The home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Ratha in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Bib shorts are the most essential part of your cycling kit. Hi, my name is Alexis Ryan, and I race for Canyon SRAM. It's where you get the most friction, it's where you get possibly get the most discomfort, and to have a pair of shorts that are comfortable and reliable, they wear well, and they're made out of high-quality materials, that's really important for us as professionals. My Rafa bib shorts are the best in the world.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our headline sponsor. Very grateful to them for their support. And I think we can offer a prize if you can identify all the song titles, album titles, or were they
song
all song titles?
They were all song titles.
In Orla's Story of the Stage Day, you can win a Pedaleur de Charme or Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt.
I think I kind of give it away because every time I said one, I could hear the smile in my voice. It was like, I'm being really sneaky here.
It's a bit of an audio wink, isn't it, when you do it every time?
Every time Orla winks at you, count them up. You've got to name the song titles as well. And email us, contact@thecyclingpodcast.com. And if several of you get it right, we'll pick a winner out of the hat.
I'll be impressed if anyone gets all of those, actually. I think I snuck in one or two.
Some of them were quite difficult. Some of them I wouldn't know that they were songs. Yeah. So obviously I've had a peeky look over your shoulder, so I'm not going to be entering the competition, actually.
R. Manley, London. Congratulations. Well, listen, today's stage, Yolene Dorr was the winner, Amy Peters second. That was a 1-2 for Bulls Dolmans. Lisa Brenner was third. That was good performance for a former winner here. But I think full marks to Abby Mae Parkinson today for taking it on, because although we weren't able to watch the race, which is a unique challenge of covering this race, we're talking about the stage before we've seen it, and we'll watch the highlights tonight. But, you know, there wasn't an awful lot happening out there, and one aspect or one factor in that was the length of the stage. Another factor was certainly the weather, and also the length of the race as well. It's 6 days.
I think it's as much that as anything else. I was talking to Bob before the stage today, and I said, you know, are you guys relishing the difficulty of this year's race, given that it has been billed as the toughest ever, it's the longest ever? And he said he had to point out to the girls last night that last year, for example, like we said in the preview episode, there was an awful lot of talk about the final stage being so difficult, and in the end it wasn't anywhere near as difficult as people had expected. And so I think he was trying to encourage exactly what we saw today, which was, you know, go on the attack, don't be afraid, don't be saving yourself for the perceived stages to come, because we have no idea what they're going to be like, and they may not be raced as difficultly, as hard as you might fear. And that would be the only concern, I guess, with this race to come, that would be that neutralization of the racing would be a factor. But to skip ahead, it's why I think tomorrow's stage is going to be really exciting, and it's good that they've broken it up like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was really a dream day for Drops, actually, being in the race
having
car.
You in the car.
Well, having me in the car, it was an absolute dream. But no, but Bob actually has a piece of paper on his lap which just says objectives in big black letters, and then it says like 1, 2, 3. One of them was like a top 10 for Ellie Dickinson, which, you know, didn't quite get, but, you know, almost got it. She finished 12. Number 2 was like get the best British jersey off the back of Ellie doing well in the final sprint, and the third one was, you know, being attacking, getting a combativity award. So really it's like tick 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 for him. So they did incredibly well, and I think it's just a great sign to see that Drops have taken that kind of attacking form, which I don't think we kind of associate with them that much. But I saw in Tour of California they were attacking, in the Touringen Tour they were attacking, and Bob was saying that Abby Mae Parkinson felt a bit like she'd missed out in the Touringen Tour because people were marking her a bit more whenever she was trying to attack and make a break. So she'll be, well, as you'll hear, she was absolutely delighted to have made a solo attack and held on for so long and just built up quite a decent lead right at the end there, and just been out to be showing herself off on the British home roads.
Well, shall we hear from Abby Mae Parkinson and Ellie Dickinson, who was 12th on the stage?
Abbey May picking up the competitivity prize. How was it out there?
It was really tough, but the crowds are incredible. Like, all the kids from the schools are so, so good, like, cheering on, and yeah, that really made me dig deeper.
And no one seemed to have got away until you did, and it was very late on in the stage. You know, what does that say about the stage in total?
Yeah, I mean, it was a super long stage. It was 160k, and we had 6k of neutral as well, so it was a super long day. So, yeah, I don't know. It was pretty steady the first 100k, and then Flotter attacked, and I sort of just countered that and managed to get away. So, yeah, that was really good.
And you were just pulling that lead out more and more and more to get in the finish. Did you think you were going to get to the finish, or?
I had my doubts. Like, it was always going to be a sprint finish. So I knew that the lead out trains would be coming in hot. So, yeah. I wanted to keep on, but yeah.
This must be one of your best days at the Women's Tour, is it?
Yeah, it was such a fun day out. Just coming through the finish line with one lap to go and everyone cheering my name was pretty epic. I loved that. It was, yeah, really epic.
Ellie, how was that? That must have been your target for the day and you succeeded. What is that as a feeling?
I wouldn't really say it was... Obviously, every British rider wants to be in the best British rider jersey, but I never, ever started the day thinking, oh, I'll be in the best British rider. There's so many good British riders, so... Yeah, it was to get a top 10, and that got me, the best British rider.
And how was that to also be on the podium when Abbey May was up there for combativity as well?
It was so good. It was such a good, it was such an inspiring ride. Like, in the last 20K here, and Abbey was there. You want to do well because, yeah, Abbey did amazing out there, so you want to do well in the back end as well.
And for the stage two tomorrow, it's a bit of a weird one, kind of like a crit. Do you think you'll do well there, manage to keep the jersey for then?
Oh, I'm not too sure. Obviously I'd like to hang on to the jersey, but it will be nice to just, yeah, get around safely. I think it could be a bit carnage tomorrow.
So that was Abbey May Parkinson and Ellie Dickinson. Ellie Dickinson, actually the last of the first group. Lizzie Dagenham finished a place behind her, about 4 seconds down. So there was a little split there. I'm not sure that will be significant, although Marina Vos, interestingly, was in that first split. She was fifth on the stage, and those 4 seconds for her may be important as the week goes on. Who knows? I mean, it's easy to sit on the sofa or sit in the car and wonder why there aren't any breakaways, why nobody even seems to be trying to form a break. And, you know, when Abbey May Parkinson went away, nobody went with her. And it's easy to sit and criticise that. But you do wonder. I mean, we wondered this during the Giro as well on certain stages, why teams without clear objectives in the race weren't at least trying to put themselves out there. You know, there's a highlights television program on tonight. They're going to struggle for highlights, and if there had been a breakaway, even if it had been for a few kilometers with a few riders, they would have ended up on the telly.
I mean, it would suggest that there are quite a few teams here who have strong GC ambitions. That's the only thing you can really say. I mean, for Abbey May to go away on her own isn't necessarily a threat for any of the GC riders or, you know, any of the other teams, really. If it was a stronger breakaway, I don't mean anything on Abbey May, but if it was stronger in numbers, then it would have been more of a danger. But it makes you think that with the calibre of riders here, we have so many former winners here, that it could well be a wide open GC. And we've seen this race won early in years gone by. Last year, for example, when Cassie Nieva-Doma won it a few years ago as well. And that, I guess, is what many rivals, unless it's your team, you know, you're wanting to try to avoid that and keep that race and the GC race open for as long as possible. So it only suggests to me, really, that hopefully there are a few teams with strong ambitions. And also, everybody's talking about this race being a race of two halves, and you've got the first three stages and then the hard, in terms of mountainous, second three stages. So maybe there's a little bit of cards being played close to the chest.
But I don't know about that, because also, I mean, the GC can be very... won by very narrow margins here, and the intermediate sprints are really key for that, because you get bonus seconds at every intermediate sprint. And we saw that today, because they were quite tightly contested and Team Sunweb really were trying to dominate those. But you'd think that a breakaway would be even more vital on this stage when there was three intermediate sprints. So that's like you get 9 seconds out of it. 9 seconds, you could even get more than that. You could get plenty of seconds if you wanted to kind of give a little, either, you know, get an early jersey or do something on the first stage so you can give your team a little bit bit more exposure, and there was two Queen of the Mountains. And so in the end, when Abby May went up, attacked, she ended up getting QOM points, she ended up getting intermediate sprint points. And you
think
that earlier...
come Saturday, that's the thing. If people are looking at where they want to be come Saturday, stage one, obviously GCs are won and lost on seconds, or at least they can be. But if you've got your eye on the overall by the end of the week, then avoiding losing time is almost as important as gaining time, isn't it?
No, that's true. But I think, I mean, Corinne Rivera said that she was up and competing for those intermediate sprints, because she knew that, I mean, we saw it at the Tour de Yorkshire, didn't we, last year, when Dani Rowe made it onto the podium because of how she was performing at the intermediate sprints, not how she was performing at the end.
Actually, that was last year, wasn't it? She was in the podium.
Women's
third.
Tour. Sorry, Tour de Yorkshire, though, as well. And then the women's tour as well, when she had that terrible crash, didn't she, with a couple of days ago.
But then I think that kind of shows how key those could have been. Obviously, they did, you know, Sunweb played it that way, but none of the other teams seemed to be interested. But, you know, it could be won or lost on those seconds.
Well, the winners on the day were Bols Dolmans, and they've come with a strong team without their, you know, their leader, Anna van der Breggen, but with a very rounded team of, you know, sprinters, as well as Jolien Duwer and Amy Peters. They've got Amelie Diederichsen, who won a stage last year, is a very good sprinter as well. So they seem well equipped to challenge for stages. Wouldn't be surprised to see Diederichsen up there tomorrow. But they've also got some strong GC riders as well, including Christine Majerus, who is the Luxembourg champion and Queen of the Mountains in this race. Now, let's hear from Christine Majerus and then Lizzie Deignan.
Well, a mucky day out there today. But talk me through the finale, because obviously it worked out well in the end for you guys.
Yeah, our leadout was quite perfect. Also, timing was really good this time. There was a solo rider alone, which is pretty easy to control when you're a big peloton. Obviously, it's easier when you're more than being alone. We started with 5K to go, a little bit at the GPM, and delivered to Jolien perfectly, and Amy still finished second. So yeah, it's a good day for the team.
The Abby May Parks had quite a big lead at one point. Were you worried at all about her possibly staying away, or did you feel it was all under control?
No, it kind of was under control. She had a minute and there was still 10K to go. And she was alone. I mean, if it would have been a group for three or four, we should have been worried. But a lonely rider is actually pretty easy to control, especially on these roads where it's like a peloton has a little bit of an advantage. It's good to win like this the first day, and it's a good start to our tour.
You've brought a lot of fast, strong riders with you. Fast, strong, fast, I don't know what that means, but is the aim here to try and win as many stages as possible? Is that what you're planning to do here?
Yeah, I think we will see day by day, and if that works, then the whole tour is going to work. I mean, the last 2 days are pretty hot, so we have to see how we're going to feel and how the peloton is developing with tiredness by the end of the week. But till there, we will see day by day. And we have strong poor sprinters like Jolien and Amelie, and we have a little bit all around us like Amy and me. And I mean, Chantal and Carreras coming back from training camp, so they build up form, but they are pretty good, so we have a little bit cost for everything.
Are you the GC leader of the team, or is that something that's been discussed?
No, I think the GC will have to see after day four, and then plan around that. It's pretty hard to control this race like that. It's pretty unpredictable, and it's hard to come with a GC plan from the beginning on, so we'll see day by day.
How was it? Just one of those days where you had too much time to think about how much nicer it would be on the sofa. It was just long, and it was inevitably going to be a sprint, so it's kind of one of them boring long days.
Everyone's coming back with mud splattered all over their faces. It looks like the weather wasn't very kind to you either. Was that particularly brutal?
I mean, it's fairly mild actually, but just once you're soaked through, it was really cold. Like I went back to the car and I was wearing two rain jackets at points, so that says a lot.
What was your game plan for today then?
Just to get through the race safely. Like, we don't have a sprinter here, so actually we wanted kind of our rivals like Mariana, who's a GC contender, not to get points, seconds in the sprints. And so if a breakaway went, great. Just kind of save ourselves, really.
And see yourselves for what then? What's the overall ambition? What's your personal goal this week?
To be honest, I'm having a rest after this. So it's kind of just like a consolidation of the first block. And just but race days, just keep on adding those up, really.
Hi, I'm Juliette Elliott. I'm a cyclist. I race all kinds of bikes, mountain bike marathons, fixed gear crits, road races, BMX, bit of downhill enduro too. I write about bikes, so I'm a journalist, I'm a blogger, a video maker, I'm a British cycling coach and a mountain bike guide. I support Skoda's campaign to close the gender gap in cycling.
This is our time.
I'd like to see more women riding bikes, mainly because I want more women to ride with, and I want more women racing, because the more women at races, the more fun it is for everyone. But also, I kind of feel like I get to enjoy this really, really cool thing and other women aren't experiencing it, and I think they should be. They're missing out. So I'll do anything I can to get more women involved. I mean, every time I go to a race, me and my mates, we're always trying to recruit more female racers. But yeah, I mean, not just for racing though. I just think women should be riding bikes for fun. It's not all about pushing yourself. It can just be just for recreation as well.
Thank you very much indeed to Skoda for supporting the Cycling Podcast Femina again. They did last year and gave us a lovely car last year, and they've given us a lovely car again this year.
A different car.
Different car. What do you think of the colour?
I can't remember the colour.
It's grey. It's grey. That's the only thing.
Well, that's why. Unusual.
It's an unusual, but quite. It's grown on me. It's grey. Grey.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I find myself embarrassingly cliched whenever people talk about cars, because somebody asked you earlier what kind of Skoda we have, and I was like, grey. And that's about as far as I go, unfortunately.
But Orla, you know why, can I just say though, you know why we don't know the colour of this Skoda?
I did.
Me and Orla. Oh no, Orla did. Me and I didn't. It's because we arrived at the airport to picked up by Richard Moore in his fancy Skoda. And he didn't turn up. So Tom Carey of The Telegraph picked us up.
Kindly swerved by the airport and picked us both up. Because Richard said...
I was listening to a really good podcast and I couldn't be bothered.
No, because I landed 2.5 hours late because my flight was delayed, thinking, oh, poor Richard will have been waiting for me at the airport. God love his little
self. I'm not going to do that.
And I landed to a message saying, my sat-nav has just told me that I won't be there for another however long. I'm stuck in horrendous traffic.
He did a minute-by-minute update as his arrival time got a minute later.
But I assumed, given that he was supposed to be at the airport at that stage, that he was maybe stuck in the M25 or something. It's only when Tom picked us up that he informed us that he was messaging us from London Bridge. Tower Bridge. He hadn't even left London yet.
He left South London.
I'd left.
So unless the Skoda sprouted wings, I don't think you would ever have made it on time.
Yeah, but you were just enjoying yourself. You'd probably have the good Skoda sound system going, the comfort.
It's one of those cars where you don't mind being stuck in traffic because it's so comfortable.
The sporty
and nice
seats.
And it's like the longer this goes on,
I'd love
the better.
We'd love to know. And then the longer you've been stuck in traffic.
By the time I saw it, night had fallen. So when you're saying what colour is the car, I'm like, could have been
you spent
dark
the day
blue.
With Bob Varney, of course. It's an Octavia VRS, very sporty.
I knew that, really.
That's really a very nice car. Thanks to Skoda. We're going to do a new thing during this women's tour, or at the end of it. We're going to do a press conference, which we do at the other Grand Tours. Please leave a voice memo on WhatsApp on the number +447971338205. That's +447971338205. Leave us a message. Don't phone the number, but leave us a message and we'll... No one will answer. And we will deal with those questions towards the end of the race.
I'm looking forward to that.
I know. Yeah. I can't wait to hear what the questions are.
It was my idea. That's why I'm looking forward to it.
So we're going to do that. Now, listen, one thing that caught my eye when we got the official start sheet this morning was that Bigla had only four riders in the race, a couple of blank spots in their team, which was unusual. I know they've got a team in Brittany competing there and headed by Cecilie Uttrup-Ludvig. So yeah, they've got four riders here only instead of six, which obviously unusual. So I thought there must be a story there. I went in search of their sports director, Thomas Campagna. Now, Thomas Campagna has been in the news as well over recent months, well, over the winter, really, when a story was published in a Dutch newspaper alleging some inappropriate behaviour while bullying, fat-shaming and intimidating riders. Several riders spoke out against his management of the team that they'd been in years past, including Iris Slappendel and Carmen Small. I went to speak to him primarily, first of all, about the absence of a full team here, but also asked him about some of those allegations as well. So you've got four riders here and a team, obviously, in Brittany. What was the reason for not bringing a full team here?
The reason is very simple. Out of 12 riders, we have 6 riders injured at the moment. Last one was Sophie, who was planned to be reserve rider, and she broke her collarbone yesterday. Nicole had also a crash in the last stage because a motorbike went into the bunch. And Elise Chebby, who was planned for this race, that was rider number 5, she was called unexpected to university to make a final exam on a doctor degree. So we couldn't get her. So unfortunately, we have only 4 riders here.
And I know the race in Brittany is a kind of revived race. Was that a race that appealed to the likes of Cecilie just because of the course maybe suited her better?
No, the reason why Cecilie was there was simply the date of the race. You can see that most of the Giro contender riders are not here, and Cecilie belongs to a possible podium contender, and they need to go to altitude. So we finished that race and we flew her into the mountains, and she's already there and preparing for the Giro.
We've been asking about that. Do you think that the timing of the women's tour is just incompatible for somebody who's wanting to go to the Giro?
Yes. We can see beautiful races like this race, or also Plouay is suffering because the good riders are not showing up because they are in World Championship preparation in altitude. Here in this case, most of these contenders are in altitude for the Giro. It's true. It's a problem. Top riders are reducing the numbers of races and specifically preparing for those events. And that means that all the competitors of those riders need to do more or less the same. And this is why more and more top riders are not here. It's a bit of a problem, I would say.
Can I ask you about some of the stories around you and the team over the winter? There were some allegations made about what had gone on in the team. I mean, the team did respond to that, but what's your response to some of the things that were said?
Yeah, I mean, there was only one opinion heard. You know, so far, no journalist spoke with me about it. When Cycling News contacted me, I offered them to open up the records, because it's a very old case from 2015, reviewed by the UCI by 4 inspectors over a period of 4 months, and they closed the case in a way that they say there's nothing we can find against him, so he did everything right. To say now the rules were different at that time, I think it's pretty cheap, no? Because the rules are the rules. If you go to court, the existing rules are in force. And more I can't say. We are here. We are since 4 years. I'm 18 years team owner. I think we have produced a lot of success. People call me a hard sport director. I'm not hard. The sport is hard. So the people need to accept the sport. And if they come for something, they have to stand for something. And we discussed that many times before they enter the team. And sometimes they pretend to be ready for something like this, for a challenge like coming to our team and go through this development, and then during the season they cannot make it, and then we have open talks and some are released because they simply don't have the quality, and if they feel that they have to answer in a way that they say he did this or he did that, which is still unproven, I think that's a very, very easy way, and it's not the correct way. What I can say is we are running this project, we are continuing to run this project.
Thanks so much.
And at the end of the day, the best answer is always success.
Were there questions asked by your sponsors? You know, was it an uncomfortable time for you?
Absolutely not, because the whole case, the Ethics Commission looked into it. It was a serious case. When the case was closed, the documents were presented to the sponsors. So the sponsors were in line, of course, when that came up 3 years later. It is just an old story cooked again. They asked me what is going on, and I said it's the case that I've presented to you, and then they closed it. For them it was clear. It was a 24-hour activity for a lot of clicks, I'm happy for all these online platforms, but I have to run a team. This is how I see it.
Well, Thomas Campagna there, I mean, I didn't have, unfortunately, the article to hand when I spoke to him, because there were a couple of things he said there that didn't really ring true in terms of the number of riders who complained. And it's worth saying that when this article was published, other riders who'd been on the team did back it up, including Annemiek van Vleuten, who was there for 1 year. They do go back a few years, 2015, as he said. He sort of came out with this line about it being a hard sport. He's not a hard DS, it's a hard sport. But, I mean, certainly Iris Slappendale is somebody that you know very well, don't you, Orla? She runs the Cyclists Alliance now, and in that role, they're really campaigning to improve conditions for women cyclists.
Yeah, she's someone who's very aware of the difficulties within the peloton. And as you say, it wasn't just Campagna there said that it was the testimony of one rider, but it was four who were quoted in that one article in the Volkskrant, Slappendale, Small, as you said, Vera Kododer and Doris Schweitzer. And I would just say that, I mean, I don't know Iris incredibly well, but I've gotten to know her a bit, at least since my move to the Netherlands. And she's far from what I would say someone who's not hard. You know, I had a conversation with her about exactly what it is that makes Dutch riders so good. And she thinks that it's because they're tougher, that they're mentally tougher than a lot of the other riders, because it's a very direct, they're a very direct people. They're used to taking criticism. They're used to giving out criticism, and none of it is personal. That's just the way the Dutch operate. So I certainly don't think that she would be someone who would be some sort of a, what is it that Piers Morgan calls everyone?
Snowflake.
Yeah, she's not exactly a snowflake, is she? I mean, but everyone has got their side to the story, and you can only take everybody's side to the story.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are one or two other people who've sort of not commented, who've been on that team and didn't want to be drawn into it. Ashley Moulman-Passio was on that team for several years. Spoke to someone else who worked for that team today who said that there were two sides to every story. But he did say some other stuff that was interesting as well about this race and about the fact that Cecilia Ludwig has opted not to ride here following Annemiek van Vleuten and Anna van der Breggen, who are not here as well. And that approach last year worked very well, especially for Annemiek van Vleuten, missing this race, going to altitude and then going to the Giro Rosa and really cleaning up. And I wonder, you know, that this is falling into the same habit as the men of racing fewer times. And it's a problem in women's cycling because there isn't the same depth. So big races like this, if they are deprived of the big stars, we talked about this in the preview episode last week, can leave a bit of a glaring absence, you know, in the lineup.
Yeah, but then again, I mean, Corinne Rivera said that in her interview, was it last episode we did?
Yeah.
Episode before? That Lucinda Brand did very well out of coming here and then going to Giro Rosa. So, I mean, it's kind of different approaches for different riders, and it depends where their priorities are. I mean, the Giro Rosa is just a mammoth race. It's incredibly climby, though, isn't it? And it's 10 days. And I suppose if you are a pure climber, then that is where you would go. But if you're anywhere
We must ask Ashley Moulman, who missed last year in order to go to the Giro, finished second at the Giro, rode very, very well. But she's come here this year. I think, though, there's an element, and I think this is in men's cycling too, of sort of herd mentality. And I think kind of Campagna hinted at that, you know, that they're watching what other riders are doing to prepare for the Giro and kind of copying that approach. And it's not that you can't conduct experiments on this. You don't actually know which is the best approach because you only know what the result is in the end, but you don't know what it would have been had they taken a different approach.
That's what I was going to say. How differently would today have been raced if those riders had been there? I don't think any differently whatsoever.
No, not at all. No.
So their presence will make a difference maybe in the hillier stages, but I can't see that today would be any different. We didn't have a categorised climb until 124 kilometres in. I mean, that to me suggests that it's a route that decided how today was ridden more than anything else. I mean, when we look at stage three, for example, the Porsche stage, we've got a categorised climb, two categorised climbs right at the start. Hopefully, my theory will be proven and we'll see lots of attacks from the off. But Porsche attacks, yeah. Gentle, sort of refined attacks.
No, after
deadly.
You.
But we've got, we've got Kasia Niewiadoma. I mean, she is absolutely the pinnacle of an exciting rider who animates a race, who attacks and he can climb really well. So I don't think you've got a bit of an obsession with Anna van der Breggen and Annemiek van Vleuten.
And,
maybe,
and the
Richard.
Thing is, they have very much copied what the men do in terms of going to altitude and doing a lot more training as opposed to racing. But I think it's good that so far, okay, Cecily's done it now as well, but she was racing and not just the altitude bit. I think it's good that that hasn't happened as yet, because as you say, they don't have the same strength and depth as the men's peloton. But yeah, I don't think the race is any the poorer on an obvious level for not having Van der Breggen and Van Vleuten here, because we've enough top quality riders, and as you say, Rose, attacking riders who hopefully when the race and the route allows will completely blow the race apart.
Well, we'll see about that, won't we?
Hi, I'm Anna Christian from Team Drops, and the women's tour will be very British. This is my first time I've ever ridden the race, and what I've heard from it was pretty hard already, but I think it's good that they're kind of pushing it on and trying to make it, yeah, a bit harder again every year and stepping up the level, so I'm quite excited.
Hi, I'm Ashley Mormon-Pessio, and the women's tour will be the most exciting race of the year.
Hi, good morning. I'm Bob Varney from Drops. I'm a sports director on this race. I think the women's tour will be the best race in the world again. I think there's a lot of talk it being harder, and I did sense genuine apprehension from some of the girls. And like any stage race, we've got to take one stage at a time. Yeah, always expect the unexpected. So I think the only thing I would say is it's going to be the most professionally run bike race in the world.
Corinne Rivera, and I'm last year's OVO Energy Women's Tour winner. The Women's Tour this year will be really hard. It's funny because it's not so many sprinters here, I think, not very many pure sprinters, so I think they're really banking it to be a pretty hard race, but I think that plays in my favor. I think I like a harder race. I like to shell the bigger sprinters, so I think it works in my favor, and I just have to keep surviving.
My name is Demi Vollering, and I'm from Park ter Valkenburg. I think the women's tour is going to be a really hard one. I'm looking forward to the difficulty of the race, but also they are very long stages.
Hannah Barnes from Canyon Sham Racing Team. The women's tour will be aggressive.
I'm Marianne Vos, racing for CCC Live, and the women's tour will be one tough, exciting battle. Oh, I think it's interesting that the race is one day longer and harder than ever. But yeah, the riders always make the race, so it doesn't really matter how tough it is, it will be tough anyway.
Tiffany Cromwell, Canyon Sham Racing. Women's Tour will be exciting, challenging, hard, but victorious. It's always good to challenge the peloton more and more. Women's Tour have definitely every year tried to step it up, start it, you know, much less challenging, I guess, and each year make it more and more difficult, so then everyone wants to bring their A game, and there's so much support behind it, so much, the organisation is top notch, so I think it's great, you know. It's definitely for a lot of girls daunting, no doubt, but at the same time, we want a professional sport, we want people to be show who's the best riders out there, so, you know, bring it on.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for supporting the cycling podcast Femina. You can get 25% off all your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com. And before that, we heard a little montage of voices from the start this morning in Beckles from some of the riders looking ahead to the week's racing, and one or two of them saying what they thought of the course and this sort of game of two halves that we've got, where there are three difficult stages towards the end. What are you two looking forward to most, would you say?
I am going to go for stage two at this stage. I've got lots of things that I'm looking forward to, but I like to live in the moment, so that's as close to the moment as I can look forward to. Because it's something different in the women's tour, and because we will see a real difference, I think, in between the riders who've done lots of crits and Kermesse racing and those who haven't. And unfortunately, because we want to see as many different riders up there as possible for as long as possible, I think it's a stage that will massively suit Corinne Rivera over most of the other contenders. She has something like 72, isn't it, national titles to her name, including crits and all the rest of it. So I'm excited to see how that's going to be raced. And that's partly, for any of the riders listening, because the riders themselves are apprehensive about it. And that always piques my interest, I think. When they're a bit nervous, I think, oh, what will this unfold as? So stage two is what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, that? Because that surprised me as well, because I even spoke to Rivera this morning and then she was apprehensive about it. She's, I think, probably because also people are like playing up her chances of winning it. So she's probably trying to be a bit more like, it's not exactly like an American crit. And then when I say to riders, oh, it's a bit like, you know, they're doing the tour series crits that they do around the UK. I mean, the roads, you know, will be similar. And then they're trying to play that and they're like, oh, it's not really like that. It's, so it'll be interesting to see what the result is.
I hope we do have a few attacks and I hope we have a bit of action and it's not just lots of laps of the same track. But yeah, we'll see in the day. But at least we get to see it.
I'm looking
well.
Forward to
we'll
riding there. It in the morning as well.
Oh yeah, how many laps
proper,
are you going to do?
Proper recce.
Yeah, how many laps?
Well, I think we can go for a nice little bike ride in the morning because it's a late start tomorrow as well.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that'll be
still
fun.
Not answering the question. How many laps?
Oh, I don't know.
You and Tom, you can give us backies, can't you? We'll just sit on the on your
sure.
seat while you.
Yeah.
We didn't know the plan to bring bikes, so yeah, we'll have to.
You can run. You can run. Probably run at the same speed as us. I'm also looking forward to Thursday's first hilltop finish. It's not, you know, these aren't the Alps we're talking about, but Burton Dassett Country Park. There's a little climb up to the finish, and it's quite a lumpy finale to that stage. The last 20, 30 kilometres is pretty hilly, which could be, with the two stages still to come, you know, could be an opportunity for somebody, because there will be riders who are holding back and waiting for the supposedly decisive next day in particular. Friday's stage is particularly hard, but that one is an opportunity for somebody. I'm thinking last year, remember we saw Lisa Longo-Borghini and Cecilia Utrecht-Ludwig try and spring a surprise on the stage into Leamington Spa, wasn't it? I think it was into
now
Leamington Spa. And it was quite lumpy and quite challenging, and they really put the bunch under a lot of pressure. It came back in the end, but this with the hilltop finish, that could be quite a good little stage for somebody to have a go.
Rose?
Well, I feel like Richard's put my one down a bit, because you made it seem like the one that I'm going to pick is a really obvious choice, and it is, but that is stage five. I'm just hesitating, because I'm just looking at a lot of consonants and not many vowels when I say
we Rob Hatch
Clandrindod Wales.
Probably be Clandrindod.
I'll
one,
get someone to tell me. Okay,
Clandrindod Wells
to Bilthrells. Oh my, okay, I've lost it completely.
The first Welsh stage.
It was downing that half a lager that has just completely put me off. Okay, because that is, they've got two massive category one climbs there, and the Epynt climb, which is the last climb, which
21
comes
kilometers.
In the last like 15 kilometers in the very end. And that's got an average gradient of 9%. So I think if there's, you know, the one climb that's going to be a leg breaker will be that one, and I like breaking legs, what can I say?
It's why we love cycling, isn't it? Yeah. We can watch other people beasting themselves while we try to stay dry and warm.
Absolutely. Well, lots to look forward to, and we'll be back every night with our podcast yeah, tomorrow from Gravesend, where we must drive to now.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
Oh
yeah. Thanks, Rose, for mimicking our piano. It was actually
the thing is, I didn't know what kind of guitar. Music it was. So I did guitar and then I did piano.
Yeah. This is why I thought we were in the John Peel Centre.
John Peel Centre. Because when we came down here earlier to have our lunch, we're sitting in the sort of the now closed cafe bit. There was a guy playing acoustic guitar in the corner and it was beautiful. And his name is Alton Wahlberg and he was from the John Peel Centre. And we got chatting to the guys from the John Peel Centre. Ronnie was telling us about sort of upcoming concerts and whatnot. And they have The Wedding Present playing on Friday, John Peel's favourite. It's sold out, but yeah, they're playing there anyway. So it sounds like they have a great like repertoire of concerts coming up. But yeah, Alton Wahlberg sounded absolutely beautiful, and he's got an album out at the moment called Photographs and Memories, and I went over and held my phone aloft next to the speakers just so we could share in the beauty of the music with all of you.
And now we're going to play The Wedding Present all the way home, all the way to our next hotel.
Well, that and while we've been recording, Lionel Burney has sent me a little music suggestion as well. Dolly Parton, Jolene, Gotta Be Done, yes. An Eight of the Stage winner. But this, though, is Alton Wahlberg.